Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jad Abumrad. This is Radiolab. Our program today is about time, all the different flavors of time. And here with me to, shall we say, taste those flavors, is Robert Krulwich, correspondent for ABC News and Nightline.
Yeah, hi.
Robert, we've been talking about clocks for the last 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if you took all
Ooh,
the
you've
clocks...
you've been counting. 20 minutes exactly.
If you took away all the clocks we've been talking about, the bird clock and the spice clock and the clock on the wall, and then you had to talk about time without mentioning a clock, what are we left with? How would you do it?
That's actually a pretty tough question. What is time essentially? Yeah. I have a neighbor, Brian Green, who's a best-selling author, Elegant Universe, Fabric of the Cosmos most recently, professor of math at Columbia, professor of physics at Columbia, pretty much does Columbia. I asked him your question. I asked him, what is time?
If you really pushed me and said, what is time? I'd say time is that which allows us to see that something has changed. When you see the second hand in your clock going around, it's changing position. And that's the simplest version of a change corresponding to time elapsing.
Okay, Robert, I'm looking at the clock here on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching the second hand, and right. It is changing positions, just as he says. Now, imagine all the clocks in the world agree on what a second is. But what if we were to take the clocks away? Is there... I mean, I still, in my bones, believe that somewhere there's a clock ticking that says what a second is, and it's always the same.
And that the second is the same in Mars and in... Yeah.
Right.
Everybody thinks that because it's so sensible that time is universally the same for everyone. Now, here's the big secret. Apparently, that's not true. Time is not universal. And this, says Brian, is part of Einstein's theory of relativity.
When we move relative to each other, a very basic lesson of relativity is that our watches will tick off time at different rates. If you have a good watch, I don't know what a good watch today is, I don't own one, but if you had a Rolex.
You don't own a watch, do you?
I never have owned a watch.
But is that right? You've never owned a watch?
I never owned a watch. I never liked the idea of a timepiece sort of ticking away on my arm. It really always bothered me. But anyway, if you had a Rolex and I had a Rolex, say, and we synchronize them perfectly, then we move relative to one another, and then we rejoin and compare our watches, they will not agree.
Well, to demonstrate what Brian was talking about, we are now in Central Park. We've got the area entirely roped off because we are going to demonstrate one of Einstein's famous thought experiments.
All right.
Which suggests that the subject, and if you will, I would be the subject, Jad.
By all means.
The subject must take a trip at an extraordinarily high speed. That's required here. So if you could help me by giving me whatever you've got over there.
Sure. Here is a jetpack, turbocharged jetpack. Put it on.
Back, yeah.
Okay, now take these rollerblades.
Oh, okay.
Now put one right, on your right foot.
Right foot and...
On your left.
On the left, Jake.
Set the target speed dial on your jetpack to 669 million miles an hour.
That's a little fast. Well. 669 million miles an hour.
All okay. Right. Now, what time does your watch say?
524.
So does mine. We're synchronized.
Exactly
now,
synchronized, okay.
When it gets to 525 in 3, 2, 1, push the red button.
Hitting the red button and...
This is what it is! I have left the planet Earth and I see a galaxy going by on this side. I see another one coming up over there. Woo! Another galaxy going by there. Now, by the way, my watch is absolutely quite perfectly. I'm having a lovely time. I'm coming around now. I'm coming around the back end. Coming in now. Coming closer and landed. That was very bracing.
Now,
I have to say.
Robert,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Look at your watch.
All right.
What time does it say?
It says 5:26. What time is it on your watch?
5:33.
That's a 7-minute difference. Is your watch broken? Because my
No.
Well,
time for you is different than time for me.
You mean literally?
Literally, it's not that my watch somehow was shooken up and wasn't functioning properly. No, time itself is not some universal concept. Time is held by the individual, by the observer. So that if I am moving relative to you, time for me elapses at a different rate than it does for you.
So relativity says that time and speed are mysteriously coupled. So that when I go fast, my time goes slow.
Which explains why our watches don't agree.
Exactly.
So this whole notion that we all have, that time kind of applies the same to everybody on Earth and Mars, Jupiter, the entire cosmos that we can see, is totally wrong.
But let me ask you this. When you were rushing through space before, your time was apparently going slower, but did you feel slower?
If I'd looked at my watch, everything was perfectly normal to me. My clock was ticking perfectly normal for me.
Well, so is mine in Central Park, so what gives?
But if somehow you could have peered in on me up there in outer space, going real, real fast, I would have seemed slower to you.
Oh.
Not only would my watch be ticking slower for you, everything about me would be behaving slower to you.
So what do you do with this information?
What do you mean?
Well, physics teaches us that if I'm, say, running down the street, and my time is ticking infinitesimally slower than that guy's time over there.
Why?
Because he's standing still.
Oh, yeah, and you're running.
Right.
So you're in different time capsules, kind of. Yes.
Apparently so. And I know this is what science tells me.
Right.
But my common sense tells me that that is completely wrong.
I know.
Nothing in my experience tells me this is the case.
This is like one of the great conundrums, it seems to me, that what you learn in science is so different from what you feel in your regular life. How do you live between those two worlds where what you know and what you feel are so different? Brian, do you learn to trust your mind over your senses? Is that what you do?
Well, I learn to trust my senses, but see them within a much larger framework. I love to walk down the street and imagine that because I'm walking, I'm kind of shattering the time around me. I'm causing time to elapse at a different rate than it would if I were standing still. I love that idea. It's not that I don't trust experience.
So you're hitting Times Square and you're wandering through, you think, oh boy, I am really changing the universe of all these other people.
Well, I really consider it totally personal, so I'm not changing their time.
Oh, what? So I'm
changing the rate at which time elapses for me. So I have power.
So when you run to catch a bus, you think, hey, I gotta get on this bus. Also, I'm slowing down time for myself.
I do sometimes, not always, but it's there. And, you know, when I look at the tabletop, I delight in the fact that I can, in my mind, picture the atoms and molecules and the interactions between them and the mostly empty space that's in there. And that when my hand touches the tabletop, I see the electrons in the outer surface of my hand pushing against the electrons in the outer surface of the table. I'm not really touching the table. My hand never comes into contact with the table. What's happening is the electrons are getting really close together and they're repelling each other. And I love the fact that I'm, in essence, deforming the surface of the table by making my electrons come really close to it. That enriches my experience. It doesn't.
Do you share this with others?
Rarely.
You're listening to Radio,
Radio Lab.
On New York Public Radio.
Public Radio WNYC.
This is Radio Lab. I'm Jad Abumrad. We're talking about time today, and here with me to help me do that is Robert Krowich, ABC News, and blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah is my specialty.
We just heard from Brian Greene, physicist, tell us about a frankly troubling idea that there is no such thing as a standard time, which I'm still having trouble believing, frankly. In any case, it makes me think of this. Do you know when you see a tortoise wandering through the garden?
Sure.
And he's going so slow.
Uh-huh.
And then you see a hummingbird whiz by. Phew! Clearly they're moving at different tempos, but perhaps they're also experiencing entirely different universes of time. Do you ever wonder about that?
Well, I think everybody wonders that. But of course, unless you are a hummingbird or a tortoise, you can never really know whether what's going on in your head is different.
True.
But Oliver Sacks, the neurologist we met before, he found a different tempo, radically different tempos, in human beings.
Really?
He's a neurologist, and he worked at a hospital in the Bronx, still does, at Beth Abraham, where he once had patients who seemed so slow, they were almost frozen. He told me about one of those patients named Myron V.
For long periods of the day, Myron would be apparently emotionless. Although, when I looked at him, I would see his frozen figure in different positions in which his right hand would be raised. A lot of these patients would be frozen in odd positions, which I'm illustrating now, but...
little balletic poses, hand in the air, but just stuck in space.
Stuck. Yeah. People would be stuck in odd poses. I thought Marwan was one of those, and I commented on this, that I had often seen him stuck in these frozen poses. And he got indignant and said, "What do you mean, frozen poses?" He said, I was just wiping my nose." And I said, you're joking, you're putting me on." And he said, "I'm not." And he was as puzzled by what I said as I was by what he had said. But then after he had told me this, I thought, "Well, hell, you know, I must watch this. And I must record it."
Now, he said he was just what? He was just wiping his nose?
He said, "I was just wiping my nose."
Okay, now that's something that takes me about 2 seconds, roughly.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas apparently this movement of the arm, if this is what he was doing, was taking about 2 hours. So I took a series of photographs at intervals of a few minutes each.
Of still Myron, with his arms gently going up.
Of apparently still Myron.
How many photographs did you
take? I had about 20 photographs or so in 2 hours. And then I put them together in a little flick pack. You know, the way one used to do as a kid.
Right.
And then one could in fact see with this that the 20 or so photos covering 2 hours in fact showed a smooth movement to wipe his nose, a movement which normally takes 2 seconds, but which in him was taking 2 hours. Although this left open the profound puzzle of how come he was not only taking 2 hours to do so, but didn't realize he was taking 2 hours to do so. The movement which to us was glacially slow was not slow to him, was normal.
Did you ever show Myron the pictures that you had made?
Yes.
And then did you say, "So Myron, look at this. It took you 2 hours to do this." I mean, if you did that, yes, then what did he say?
He was astonished, and that's too mild a word. He was thunderstruck.
Wow. So Myron had no idea that he was experiencing the world slower than the rest of us.
Not until Oliver stapled all the pictures into a flip book and go, and sped up time. And then Myron can see what it was he was doing. But, you know, does a turtle know that he's processing slowly? Does a hummingbird know that it's processing fast? I don't think so.
Huh.
But in this case, we now know that this is a human being absorbing and performing at drastically different tempos from the rest of humanity. Oliver has another patient that he likes to talk about. Her name is Hester Y.
Hester, she would have the opposite of the slowing or glaciation. She would move with extreme speed. And this came out very, very clearly sometimes when I had the students play ball with Hester.
What does that mean? They play catch?
Yeah, they would play catch. I'm sorry, is that the wrong word?
Yeah, play ball. Play catch, right. Yeah.
Because one of the striking things when people are Parkinsonian is when people may appear unable to initiate any action, they can reciprocate. And if you suddenly throw a ball to someone with Parkinsonism, even if they appear absolutely frozen, they will catch it. And often I would demonstrate this to the students. I would usually have 7 or 8 students, and we would usually sit in a semicircle around the patient. So Hester would be in her chair with a semicircle of students facing her. And she was so quick, and the ball came back and hit the student on his throwing hand.
Wow. So the guy throws the ball at Hester, she catches the ball and throws it back before he's even put his hand back in place.
Just so.
How many times faster is Hester moving than the student?
Well, let me put it in general terms. Her reaction time is a tenth of a second or less, and usually the best reaction times of Olympic athletes is about a seventh of a second. Anyhow, the ball came back very, very fast. And I would say to Hester, slow down. You're too quick for them. Why don't you count up to 10, pause before you throw the ball back, count up to 10.
She's still in her very speedy mode.
And she would say, okay, okay. And the ball would come back scarcely slower. And I would say, I asked you to count up to 10. And in a voice which I really can't imitate, but this is the crushed voice, the technical term is tachyphemia, rapid speech, and the crushed voice of extreme Parkinsonism, she would say, I did count up to 10. I can't speak quick enough for that.
In her brain, was she thinking that she was giving normal speech?
Yeah. She was no more conscious of her speed than Mauen was of his slowness.
Huh, so Myron has somehow slipped into whale time or turtle time because of the disease, which sent Hester in the opposite direction into a kind of hummingbird tempo. Do you think there's a limit to this? How fast she can go or how slow he might
slow? Well, I guess there must be like some kind of physical limits. If she wanted to say 20,000 words in a second and could even get her brain to do so, her mouth wouldn't work that fast, her tongue wouldn't work that fast. So there's constraints like gravity, energy, the nature of your body. So there, we are.
What about the rest of us? What kind of range is available to you or I?
I am not sure that such radical slowings or speedings occur in the rest of us. Except perhaps in very unusual circumstances, perhaps in sports and perhaps in situations of mortal danger. People who are in the zone, they may give descriptions of what appears to be a baseball comes towards one at 100 miles an hour, but some batters, are they called batters?
Yeah.
Okay.
People at bat.
Okay. But people at bat may say that the ball seemed to come to them more slowly, and they could see the seams on the ball.
In the zone. Robert, I just so happen to have something here which is a perfect illustration of what he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
Except it's not baseball. It has to do with track.
Track's good.
Here's the short excerpt.
When I'm up, they call my name. I step up on the runway. Usually it's just, relax. You are the best. Plant. And I don't think anything else after that.
I want that adrenaline coming when he says runners take the mark. Because I only got 10 seconds or 9 seconds at that point, you know. But if it's pumping, 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 then they say take your mark, well, I'm exhausted. You know, once I get in them blocks, it's like, I don't want to be exhausted. I want to be on fire at that moment.
So I'm like, I'm ready, I'm ready. Temperature's 52 degrees out here. And body's warmed up. Sitting in the blocks, and like the cold ain't even phasing me. I don't even feel no cold because I got so much adrenaline going through my body. I'm just ready to put it to them today, put it to everybody.
And if you're not ready, it doesn't matter at this point because you have to be ready.
And when he says set,
set, sitting there thinking, this gun go off, and leave him, give it all you got. And just take it out from the gun and just hold on. You go feel the strength out there, and you ain't gonna slow down. No fatigue or nothing gonna come over.
Whoever's in the lanes behind me, they go get it.
I'm just listening, get in tune, listen to the whole hush of the crowd as they get quiet for the gun.
In that moment when they say, take your mark, set, I become the gun. So when that gun fires, it's almost like I'm the bullet being fired out of the pistol. And that's my reaction. When I hear that sound, it's almost like there's a firing pin smacking me in my butt and pushing me. So it's not that I sound out everything around me. I've already sounded out everything because I'm the bullet. And it's only me in the chamber.
You line up, you hear the gunman say, set. And at that point, you become blind and deaf because you don't go off of what you think you've heard. Because if you do that, you just lost the race. You have to be one with the gun.
And when he says set, I just breathe all the air in. I take a deep inhale.
Take one last look at my competitors in the lane. Now I'm focused. Just thinking drive and go, drive and go.
And then I hold my breath. And then...
sweep, 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 drive, 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 pick him up, pick him up, pick him up.
I let all the air out, and that's when I start running as fast as I can.
When you're running, and you're so relaxed in what you're doing, to where a song can just pop into your mind about 30 meters, that is the ultimate point I think an athlete wants to be, because that's when you get that peak performance. It's almost like everything is moving in slow motion, and you watching the birds kind of slowly fly by, and you hear that song just whistling in your ear.
When I take off and I start to climb in the air, it all goes pretty fast. But once I hit that apex of the jump and my hips are up over the bar, time really slows down. I mean, you can just feel this rotation, and it feels like someone's grabbed a hold of your hips and really given you a push, a boost up in the air. And for this moment that you're sort of suspended on top of the bar, it's really serene. It's really almost peaceful. It just seems like it lasts an eternity.
Come off the turn, I'm in the front, I'm in the front. I know they coming for me, they just stalking me like cheetah.
I'm in the front.
So I'm just thinking, just get away, just get away, just get away. Turn on the afterburner.
Hold on, hold on. Just stretch it out, start going.
Get to the top of the curve, turn on the afterburner.
Hold on, hold on.
Pow, pow, pow. Powering down like a train. See him come up beside me at the peripheral. You gotta hold on, this is always happening. They're trying to get you at the end, but you can fight them off, you can fight them off.
At the end, it's just compete, compete, compete. And then lean at the tape.
Go ahead, reach and go, reach and go, reach and go.
Pump them arms, baby, pump them arms.
Get across the line, just smile out, smile out.
And we get down to the tape.
Yeah, boom! Got him at the half of a step. Well, that's the kind of stuff I live for, though. I live for those intense moments like that right there.
It's hard to accept the fact sometimes that you are human, but it's true. And I've had a heart surgery in year 2000, but as athletes, and you can ask almost any athlete, they'll tell you, we believe we're invincible. Because if we go in there with any other thought, there's no chance of us accomplishing our goal. Because we have to believe, we have to confuse ourselves into believing that no matter what's wrong with you or what you're dealing with, it's not going to be a factor to what you're trying to accomplish. We believe we're invincible.
Thanks to The Next Big Thing and sound artist Ben Rubin for that, a piece he produced for the National Track and Field Hall of Fame. You can visit them on the web at trackhall.com. So, Robert, what do you think?
This is a case, I think, of athletes showing you how we contest with time, get power by mastering time, shaving it slightly.
Time and power have a long history. That's what we'll look at shortly. I'm Jad Abumrad. Robert Krowich and I will be back in a moment.
You're listening to you're listening to Radiolab.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.